Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is the welcome to the town of Montville Town Council regular meeting of February 12th, 2024. Please join me in a pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence in honor of our military.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Agnes, roll call, please.
Counselor Karen is absent. Counselor Jasper?
Here.
Counselor Lathrop?
Here.
Counselor May?
Here.
Counselor Trevilian?
Here.
Counselor Clutter?
Here.
Present.
Okay, tonight we have two presentations. And the first one is a presentation by Lights Out of Connecticut, and followed that will be the presentation by the Register of Voters regarding early voting. So, Councilor Sevilla, would you like to introduce the presentation?
Just wanted to welcome Craig and Meredith. Our Conservation Commission asked us to take a look at this initiative, and we're looking forward to learning more about it, and we appreciate you coming. So, thank you.
I think I'd like to invite the councilors to maybe move down to the chairs or move aside because we have their presentation up.
Oh, okay.
So we can see it.
Nobody's going to hurt me if I go down at it.
I'd like to thank the town of Montville to inviting us over to give this presentation, especially Mayor Bunnell and the council members. It's good to see a town taking steps like this at this level. You're definitely ahead of the game. Yes, this slide is left dark initially. To talk about the night, oftentimes we do take steps to avoid nighttime. However, night is crucial habitat. As humans, we have adopted to live in the dark in certain aspects. We may recall that it takes us about 15 minutes for our eyes to adjust to the dark. In all, it takes about 45 minutes for us to build up a protein in our retina that once we are there, we could actually see as well as rabbits and whippoorwills, but with a flash of light, it's all back to ground zero, where we have to start all over again. So a lot of humans never, in this day and age, never really experience how well we can adapt to the light. Other animals have evolved to really depend on the night sky. It's estimated that 63% of all species are nocturnal. So a lot of us really don't interact oftentimes because of the glare that we have in our lighting, in our towns, and in our homes, that the glare really accentuates how black the darkness really is, and we never venture into it. Normally, 50% of all night hours are lit by the stars. However, recent studies have shown that 90% of the population of Europe and the United States live under light-polluted skies. So we're not experiencing a true night the way it was we're supposed to. 80% of Americans have never seen the Milky Way. What does this all mean? Well, 35% of the light that is impeding us from seeing the night sky is wasted sky glow. And this amounts to a waste of $3 billion in energy costs alone. There's also a cost that will impact human safety and human health. So this is the eastern seaboard. You could see where we are. This is one of the darker areas of the state. However, there's still a large degree of light pollution. So if you're a migrating bird or a moth or some animal that relies on the night sky, you could be in areas that's constantly daytime. So furthermore, in the sky glow that I just showed, man has reached up into the sky with these beacons. Some are monuments, some are for airports. However, there's a impact that these have on migrating birds. If a bird is lost in one of these beacons, their course could be deviated by 5 degrees to a full circle. So oftentimes with these beacons, birds are flying in circles for most of the night. And the culprit are these very bright LEDs that are being installed everywhere. This is with some technology that was supposed to save us money. However, with the saturation of the use of these LEDs, they're everywhere, and it is as bright as the sun. So whenever you see these, it's like little miniature suns everywhere, and this is what our animals have to deal with. To back up, a study came out back in 2019 that in the United States since 1970, we have lost close to 3 billion birds. So they're facing many threats. Some of these birds are facing extinction. So from this paper, some of the threats that our birds are facing are being caused by cats and other invasive species. We won't go into cats. That's a very contentious issue. We're not here to talk about cats. Collisions with glass and industrial infrastructure, communication towers, things like that, wind turbines. Also, the use of pesticides, rodenticides, and other toxins, and climate change. I could argue that there is a relationship between light pollution and the collisions, the habitat loss, and the predation. But to give you an idea of the scale of this, a lot of people don't realize that our birds migrate at night. In North America, we have 722 bird species. 76% of those migrate. Obviously, our crows, our blue jays, our chickadees hang around. That's only close to about 25% of the birds. Of these birds that migrate, 80% migrate at night. So they have evolved along millions of years ago to navigate at night, using the stars, using Earth magnetic field. They can sense these magnetic waves and orient themselves. It's because they use the stars and the moon and the rising sun, they rely on dim skies. You know, if you're looking at birds at your bird feeder, these are diurnal creatures. They're active during the day. However, when they are migrating, they need to migrate at night with these dim lights. They can't see any better than we can. So they really need to have skies that do not have light pollution so they can navigate. These are the major flyways. The one on the east, the Atlantic Flyway, is flying over our major cities. We're talking from Portland through Boston, Hartford, the coast of Connecticut into New Jersey and New York. They really don't get a break. And this is the cost. This is a result of a collision that happened in Texas. In one night, there was about 400 passerines that were killed. This was in 2017. They have been outdone. This past October, there was an event that happened in Chicago. It was a worst-case scenario because of the weather, the timing of the migration and the pattern, and there was an event at this very big glass building called McCormick Place. They had internal lighting, and as the birds were navigating, they flew into this, and the sun was starting to rise. This signals to them that it's time for them to rest in a park, a wooded area, or whatever, so they could rest, eat, and recharge, so the next day they could go on their way. So they see the reflection of the lake and the surrounding trees, and they crashed. They lost 1,000 birds that night. They had already taken steps. One of the steps they had taken was to shut their lights off, half of their lights off, and that they did see a drop of 60% of their birds. The issue here was their lights were kept on because of this event. It was a worst case scenario. So again, 722 species in North America, 76% migrate, 80% of those migrate at night. In the United States, we lose up to 1 billion birds due to window crashes. This isn't just happening in our cities, in our large buildings. This is also happening in our homes. So there's things that everybody can take to help with this. So we are asking people at first to shut off your lights during peak migration. That's a simple task. However, if you're shutting your lights off during peak migration, that's going to help the birds, but there's other creatures that you could also help. There are other nocturnal species. Up the left there are moths and bats, obviously. Moths, you may not realize, are very important pollinators. We had a call today with Xerces Society. They are very big advocates for moths, fireflies, butterflies, etc. And it was pointed out to me, I never knew this, that there is a major pollinator for apples in Arkansas, which are moths. So moths are a huge pollinator that we will rely on. The caterpillars of the moths, especially in Connecticut, they live in the oak trees, and this is the food that the birds rely on to raise their young. Also, our aquatic environments, be it on the Thames River or any of your ponds, the light pollution will disturb their cycle. So when it's light, they don't know if it's day or not, and they stay submerged, and they can miss an entire evening of not mating. So you will lose this critical biomass. Same thing with the moths. We all know the story of a lot of moths on the back porch. This is a vacuum cleaner effect that the moths, and they just came out with a paper 2 weeks ago that describes this mechanism of how they're disoriented. And when they're disoriented, flying in circles, they do not eat, and then they do not mate. So you have an entire generation of moths that are lost. Also, there are a lot of amphibians and dragonflies. We have lost a lot of dragonflies, and a lot of this is due to light pollution. They don't know if it's day. I'm sure a lot of us can remember driving through Connecticut in either May or June and having very, very dirty windshields because of the bugs that are smashing on them. We don't have that anymore. There is a paper that came out about 2018 out of Germany showing that there was a 75% of insect biomass. It was a decline. This hadn't been studied, and so a lot of people started to put their attention to it. We are in serious insect decline. Here again, insects are bird food, and insects are pollinators. Without these insects, we will be in a really, really bad situation. There's one place in China where they have to actually pollinate by hand fruit crops. That was something usually done by bees or moths, and here we are. So what about humans? We have evolved to sleep at night, obviously. So when we wind down in the evening, if we're not exposed to artificial light, we have these leptin levels that will moderate our appetite. So a lot of people, because they're surrounded by this bright blue light constantly, this endocrine system is off, and so their appetites are askew. Furthermore, there's a major impact of these levels on our endocrine system, our melatonin. And melatonin has been shown to be a very important moderator of our immune system. We saw a very good demonstration about melatonin levels and how they fluctuate. When the melatonin levels are high, there's a lot of tumor fighting activity of our immune system. So when they're low, that ramps up. However, if we're constantly exposed to light, our melatonin doesn't reach those levels to fight tumors. There is a study that was done out of Israel that showed that women who were exposed to light pollution had an increased risk of 73% of getting breast cancer. The AMA has termed light pollution as being cancer-inducing agent. Also, another thing of safety, this is taken from New Haven. If anybody here tries to navigate on the rivers or Long Island Sound, you need these lights out there to navigate. They're getting lost in this glow, so it's affecting us. And I will now turn this over to Meredith. We'll have a chance for questions at the end.
Thanks, Craig. I might just hold the mic just for usability. So I'm going to be transitioning over to talk about the policy piece of this discussion. So Craig just gave you a lot of information about how light pollution can harm the ecosystem and different wildlife and also human health. And I'm going to talk now about the ways that the state level and also in some cities, there are regulations in place to try to limit light pollution. So the good news is that you might not be able to tell from looking around, but Connecticut actually has pretty good rules in place at the state level for external lighting. There are, ever since 2004, there have been a set of light pollution controls, and that requires that all outdoor lights on commercial buildings, including large residential buildings like apartment buildings, larger ones, have to have what they say full cutoff, meaning the light faces downwards. So they don't want the light going sideways. They don't want it going up in the air. We've had that since 2004, and not a lot of states have that. There's some exceptions, and we're going to be working this spring to try to limit those because it's 20 years later, and there's an update that we could do. The other good news is that there are 19 states here in the United States that automatically adopt the International Energy Conservation Code whenever it gets updated, and we are one of those states. So whenever they update this code, it automatically becomes part of Connecticut's laws. And this one is fantastic because it requires, as of 2021, that on all new commercial, it has to be new commercial buildings and major retrofits, those buildings have to have timers and dimmers on all the external and internal lights, so that at the end of the day, when a business closes, within 1 hour, the lights should be turned off internally and externally. And you can see the difference. You don't see that very much now. This is as of 2021. But that's actually the new state law for all new construction and major retrofits. So that's the problem. The challenge is, though, is what do we do with all of the existing buildings that do not follow, sorry, that's a little hard to read. The problem is that we've got a lot of buildings that are, they're grandfathered in under the old law because the state building code is not retroactive. It's only for forward, forward buildings. So there are basically two possible solutions that are pretty popular. The first one is some kind of a light curfew, and that also often happens at like a municipal buildings where a town or a city will decide, we will turn off all of our city-owned buildings, at 11 p.m. if they're unoccupied. It's kind of a commitment that you make, and that's called a lights out law. And the other way is light trespass. In some towns and cities here in Connecticut do have light trespass laws that require that you can't have light from one property spill over into another property. That's considered like you're decreasing the ability of that other property owner from enjoying their property if you're like shining a floodlight in their backyard or in their window. That's called light trespass, and there are towns that have it. So the good news, again, is that as of, it went into effect this past just last month, we have a lights out law at the state level requiring all state-owned buildings to turn off unnecessary lights external lights at 11 p.m. So that should be like DMVs and courthouses. If those buildings are unoccupied and not being used, they should turn off their lights at 11 o'clock. And this bill was passed with unanimously from the Environmental Committee, unanimously from the state, the House, the Senate, and was signed by the governor in June because it was estimated it would save our state $1.5 million. At one point, it was going to save our state almost $4 million if it had included state leased properties, but decided it was too complicated because they don't own those buildings. But just this law is going to save $1.5 million if it's followed the way that it's supposed to, of turning off unnecessary lights. And the other interesting thing is that it's for the protection of birds. That's what's so unique, is that it's a curfew law for birds. And that's the main goal for it. It was voted unanimously out of the Senate, as I said. And we had 35 co-sponsors from the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats. It was seen as like a feel-good bill because they could help birds, lower energy costs, lower emissions, carbon emissions, and they could save money all at the same time. So we didn't have even one person in the General Assembly vote against this law. Now the challenge is to see if we can get one city or town to also pass a lights out rule. So that would require all the town or city buildings to turn off their unnecessary lights. And they're working on this in Greenwich. But this is this would follow the light curfew approach to existing buildings. And I just want to point out, we have a lot of lights out programs around the country. We're a state level, obviously, but there's Lights Out Baltimore. We just met some folks from Lights Out Philly, and Lights Out Texas is huge. They're massive because they have Laura Bush, the former First Lady, who supports them. I'm just about done here. I just want to point out, the town of Canton here in Connecticut has a light trespass rule. That's that other way that I mentioned that you can regulate, is just saying you can't shine your lights on someone else's property. And through that, they have a basic set of standards, and it's what they call being a good neighbor. They actually have that written into there. It's kind of like having good manners. You don't shine your light in someone else's bedroom window. So they have the good neighbor by keeping unnecessary direct light from shining onto surrounding areas. So I just want to show you other towns are doing it. Good neighbor. So just wrapping up, this is a very glassy building in New Haven that's known to kill birds. And so the question becomes, you know, when we think about buildings and our built environment, what makes our built environment beautiful? And can a building be beautiful and all this light be beautiful if it's harming birds and harming living things and creatures and insects? This is actually a park that's in, this is in Bridgeport. They installed 113 lights in a park that's less than a mile long. It's 3/4 of a mile. And they shine all night long. All those neighbors have these lights shining in their windows all day, all night. And it's estimated that costs the city about $10,000 a year to light all night long. And people really want the park to at least dim them or reduce the output by like 50%. So again, the question becomes, what makes a community sustainable? Are we making good choices for our fiscal, you know, for our pocketbooks, for our wildlife? Are we making good choices for our neighbors? And it's really an invitation to think again about lighting and how it fits into a larger vision of what a healthy and sustainable community is. And with that, we'll take any questions if people have. We covered a lot of material, but any questions?
Yeah, I have one, Meredith.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know of any specific grants that are available for exterior lighting to switch to timers, mm-hmm. or motion sensors, or anything?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is okay. So because lighting is a form of energy. When you install those kind of timers and motion sensors that that Nick just mentioned, you can actually. That falls under the energy efficiency category. So it's making your building more energy efficient. So because of that, you can apply for grants. There's the green bank that you can apply to. There's also some incentives through the state, like different rebates that when you install them. We can get more information about that, but I don't know. But I for sure know that it's considered a form of energy efficiency. So, yeah. That is, okay, well, enforcement is the biggest challenge. As I said, the challenge was the existing. The other challenge is to enforce the existing laws. Because actually, I'll tell you a funny story. I went to the library in Canton to do a presentation, and I said, okay, well, let's take a look at your laws. And they were not expecting much, because I guess they have a lot of light pollution there. They have quite a bit. And when we looked on their zoning, and we saw that they had a law in place, but it just was not being enforced. And they said, who's enforces it? It's actually neighbors have to complain about neighbors to the police, and then the police have to go. Unless you put some other program in place, which some communities have, they really strictly enforce it, and they have someone going around telling people, you know, your sign's shining, or they can shine right in a roadway. I don't know if you've ever driven by a business, and their lights are shining right in your face, and you can't really see where you're going. It's called glare. So the problem also is enforcement. Yes. Yes.
So.
Yes, that's an excellent point. Yes, it's true.
Thank you. We are working very closely with the Dark Skies International. And they have come up with five principles to for your lighting design and the lighting programs to think about. Is the lighting useful? If it's just a floodlight on the backyard or an empty lot that's not being used, you can shut it off. Targeted, what was just pointed out, and control only where you need it, and try to use warmer colors. Try to go with amber lights. This is a good demonstration. This is about a watt of light that's showing. Okay, so this, imagine this is on your walkway. It's lighting your walkway. But who is annoyed by the light coming off the side? Now try to imagine that this is like a very bright floodlight on the side of somebody's building. You could shield it a little bit. That works better, but you're still getting this light trespass coming off. Better yet, if you could shield it even more. And so you actually decrease the lumens because this reflective hood is focusing the light only where it's needed. So when we talk about the insects and the amphibians and your neighbors and the birds, all the light that is lost up here that contributes to the spectral is not simply by shielding it. And this also applies to sport light as well.
So, Greg and Meredith, I invited our public works director, John Carlson, to kind of just hear this, because we may be tasking him to kind of start looking at where we can start applying this in a town on a, you know, a more practical measure. So I don't know if you have any questions, John, or wanted to ask him anything, but I did invite you here to kind of listen to this and hopefully get some ideas or...
Very interesting. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, the Conservation Commission thought... strongly this, and they recommend us be brought to the town council. So I want to say thank you to the Conservation Commission. It was a really good decision to bring them forward. So, all right. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
So next on the agenda is the register voters regarding early voting. I believe we have both register voters here. And Agnes, how do we turn this off? Just turn it off.
I don't know.
Good evening, members of the town council, Mayor Bennell, members of the audience. For those of you that don't know me, I am Jeff Rogers. I'm the Republican Registrar of Voters, and tonight I'm accompanied by my partner, Mary Holman, the Democrat Registrar of Voters. We're pleased to be here tonight to explain to you about the State of Connecticut Early Voting Program. We're going to explain how we plan to implement it and how it impacts our town. Early voting is an unfunded Democratic initiative that imposes a heavy financial mandate on towns and municipalities. The state of Connecticut has a population of a little over 3.6 1.6 million people. The Connecticut Democrat legislature appropriated to each town a one-time equal livelihood grant of $10,500 per town. That means the town of Stanford got the same as Andover. The amount Canterbury got is the same as what Bridgeport got. Same as what the town of Montclair. This in total is just about $1.75 million statewide. When you break this down, it equates to about $2.06 per resident to implement the program and to educate the public. In previous typical presidential election years, the town would be expected to hold three elections: the presidential preference primary, the primary, and the general election. This would total three voting days. With the implementation of early voting, Connecticut's going from 3 days to 28 voting days. 4 days of early voting plus the presidential preference primary, for the presidential preference primary in the regular polling day. Then 7 days of early voting for the primary plus the primary regular voting day. And then 14 days of early voting plus the general election voting day. Preparation for all of this to take place is going to result in many more hours worked by us. As I said, early voting is forcing an extremely heavy burden, a heavy financial burden, to all towns. Mary and I have worked conservatively, looking for minimal increases within our department and in what it is we can control. With that being said, our overall budget request this year is up 73.8% from last year. On the referendum and election side, it is up 107%. On the registrar side of the account, it's up 42%. This year, with 28 voting days, it's going to cost us just over $63,000 for elections. With the one-time grant, $10,500 issued to our office, we decided that it was best to invest that money into resources, into our resource for aging voting infrastructure. We went out and we bought 10 new Franklin voting booths. In the packet you were issued, you'll see what those voting booths look like. Okay? Each table is equipped to accommodate 4 voters at any one time, and they'll take up less space within the polling place. These tables are also going to be easier to move and easier to set up, and they're more stable than the flimsy voting privacy booths we have now. This will also be easier for our public works folks when they go to work to move our stuff for us. Lastly, as I said, it'll require less space to store. On a good note, I was able to negotiate the deal with this. We purchased 12, we got them for the price of 11. And that they also eliminated the shipping. Each voting district will receive 2, as well as our early voting location. We have been told that they should be delivered to us in time for the upcoming presidential preference primary. The Secretary of State has also distributed a draft plan of what is expected by registrars to do, and their suggestions on how to implement the early voting program. The difficulty that each town is experiencing is that the plan is broad and vague, and simply put, it's a one-size-fits-all concept. This isn't practical or feasible, as the needs for small towns are different than those of large cities. The logistical layout and digital support also varies. Here in Montville, Mary and I believe that we have developed a plan that does not impose any additional financial burdens to the town, and that all the additional financial increases are a direct result of the program itself. The draft plan was distributed to registrars just before Christmas in 2023. The same day that it was furnished to us, I furnished it to Mayor Bunnell to review, and as of this date, the Secretary of State, Stephanie Thomas, has not provided us with a final plan. We're only 6 weeks out from the presidential preference primary, still floundering, wondering what we're gonna do. We have a plan, and so we've submitted that plan to the mayor. We additionally have met with both the Republican and Democrat town committee chairmen, and that we share our plan and our budget request with them. They both agree and support the concept and approach that we have come up with, and that how we plan to implement this program here in Montville. And in fact, on the front of your packet, you have a letter that's signed by both of them expressing their support for just that. The plan that we submitted to the mayor is a derivative of the draft plan that the state of Connecticut early in-person voting handbook had. We have tailor-made our plan to be applicable to how we best feel early voting should be implemented here in Montville. Most importantly, we believe that the process should run smoothly with the least amount of confusion for the electorate while also not impeding the operation of our town hall. Due to the specific technical requirements, the town hall is the ideal place to conduct early voting. We believe the only one alteration that is needed in order to smoothly conduct the early voting process would be to, our proposal is that we would assume the same office that we have now, but we need the human resources director's office. That office used to previously be used by the registrars for early voting, not early voting, but election day voting in the past. Back a couple of years ago, that changed a little bit, but that room is equipped with the electronic stuff that we need, and subsequently it would work very well into our program. We also need the small hallway that leads into her office, and then we would also utilize our equipment room as well as our office. This would keep everybody out of the hallway, per se, and allow them to flow through our offices and right back out. On February 2nd, 2024, our office was directed by the Secretary of State to submit our written certification of the early voting location and the early voting plan. The law requires that this plan be carried out at least 20 days before the presidential preference primary. However, because this is a first-time event, first time that we're having early voting, the Secretary of State directed all towns to submit that information by Friday, February 9th. We complied with their directive, and that was submitted on February 6th. Now, before I conclude, we are certain you have questions. In your packet, you'll find a section labeled Questions from Town Clerks and Registrar Voters Early Voting Hours. That packet is made up of 10 pages of questions, and that is from a first and second of three office hours. As you look closely, there's no answers. These are questions that all election officials throughout the state have submitted to the Secretary of State's office, and as I said, there are no answers. We're still waiting on them. As chairman of Nahanni County Rovac, my registrars within the county asked me if I would reach out to the Secretary of State, which I've included the email to you as well, asking for those answers. As of this date, that still hasn't been done. Now, lastly, the Secretary of State, Stephanie Thomas, has identified that many town leaders do not understand the early voting program and how the job of the registrar of voters has significantly changed as a result. For towns with part-time registrars like us, the number of hours is increasing greatly. Early voting bears no resemblance to what we are used to with election day voting. Now, my previous partner, Robin Marquand, used to say every day that this is not the job that your grandmother did. She's absolutely right, because this job has become a job requiring extensive computer and technical skills, managerial skills, organizational skills, extensive knowledge of election laws within Title IX, of the Connecticut General Statutes, and on top of all of that, it requires us to be certified. We hope that we can count on you for your continued support of our office, and at this time, we're prepared to take any questions you may have.
Jeff, you guys are looking for an increase in your salaries, am I correct?
We are. We're looking for an $8,000 increase for each of us. So basically, right now, we make $22,000. We're looking to go to $30,000. We will be, obviously, it's requiring more time. Some weeks we work, on an average, we're there between 12 and 15 hours a week. Election time, we're there sometimes 40 and 50 hours in preparation. This year is going to be an extremely busy year because we're preparing to do something we've never done before, not only with early voting, but it goes directly right into then what would be a normal general election day for the presidential preference primary, and then immediately following that, we have to do our canvass. Typically, canvass begins in January, but because of the presidential preference primary, we have not been able to do any aspect of that. We have to wait until after that. So now it takes our window that typically goes from January to May, and we're closing it down from April to May. So there's going to be a lot of extensive hours work to get that done in that time.
Thank you.
Jeff, it's understood this year is going to be extremely time-consuming and a lot more hours for the registered voters, but the off years, can you still substantiate that salary increase? Because I think that was set up for 19.5 hours a week.
Well, according to the charter, we're not allowed to work more than 20 hours a week. That was changed years ago because over 20 hours mandated that you then provide us benefits or whatnot. What we're asking for, in essence, Tim, is to go from $21 an hour to $28 an hour to also put that in perspective, I was a school bus driver as a part-time retirement job. I was making $28 an hour, and I just negotiated a contract for First Student in Norwich that's getting them up to $35 at the end of that pay. We don't do this for the pay. Clearly, we're not asking for a lot of money. And as far as the off years, currently voting is not going away. This will happen every year. We may not have a presidential primary, but primaries and elections, those two will happen annually. And all the other additional tasks still remain the same.
Well, I think you may have misunderstood. I fully understand that what I was saying is a non-presidential or non-gubernatorial, those years are not as labor-intensive. That's what I'm saying. So
that's not entirely true, because a primary can happen every single year. And then we also, what we just experienced in December was also an anomaly, but I see that, you know, the potential, when we talk about the dog pound later, that could be a whole other thing. If you have a referendum, you're looking at another $16,000 on top of what we're just talking about here tonight.
So
unless you can keep referendum under control, yeah, then that's probably the best way that we can mitigate extra expenditures.
Any other questions?
So all these days of extra early voting, those will happen at the town hall?
Will happen here at the town hall. The game plan that what we've designed was that people will be able to come into town hall as normal, come down the hall, enter the small hallway where you would go into the human resources director's office. You would meet with somebody there who'll check you. The way that early voting happens, it's live. It's in person. You have to show up in person. You'll show your form of identification the same as any other regular voting day. You will then be logged immediately right into the Connecticut voter registration system. So that way there, that eliminates the possibility of coming back and voting a second time. It's live as it happens. Then you'll go into that human resources director's office, where we'll have two voting booths. We'll be able to put up to 8 people at any given time in there, the same as what you will see in the future at any of our other polling locations. Because right now when we're set up, you see there's 8 privacy booths. They're just against the wall. They're the suitcase things that fall apart every time they try to put them up. These are going to be tables. They're more or less a round table split in 4, as you can see by the flyer that's in there. So there'll be 2 of those. They'll vote. As part of the voting, it's a similar process as to the absentee program, where you'll have an envelope. Right now I'm working on a program that the CVRS system is, there's 2 sides of it. There's a town clerk side and our side. The town clerk, who deals with absentee voting, when they prepare the absentee ballot, they are able to print labels, and those labels then go on the respective envelopes, so that it's all, you know, it's legible, so we know that when Tim May shows up, it tells you who you are, where you live, your party, and your voting district. With our side, we're not able to set up a label to do that same sort of stuff, but at least it's enough that we can turn around and get your name and address, your polling location, as far as your political party. Where the political party is important is specifically in primaries, because when you come in, you're going to either be voting Democrat, or you're going to be voting Republican. We need to ensure that the right ballots are issued to the right people in the right districts. So,
how were referendums done? Because just on that same thread, referendums, you can be a taxpayer and vote on referendums. So how is that articulated in the making sure someone's properly registered as either a voter or a taxpayer?
Well, voting is no different. There's nothing going to be any different.
How do you articulate?
The same way that we normally will. If there's a referendum that involves somebody that is a taxpayer but not a resident, they will then have to go through the tax collector's office exactly as we do on a regular day now. That doesn't change.
So just be another level of checking during election day.
Right, for only when it's a referendum, though. So, I mean,
is that accounted for in your $11,000 or $12,000 for a referendum? I didn't see that in the numbers.
It doesn't, there's no expense to that, because that would happen during business hours just like other voting. Do you mind if I take questions from the audience?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Do you know what the minimum wage is currently?
It varies depending on the position. So everybody will be minimum wage or more, depending on the specific
position. Well, like for the state of Connecticut, do you know what minimum wage is?
I don't
$15.69
Each town pays differently. So being the chairman of the London County Rollback and dealing with 14 different towns, we're pretty much like right in the middle of what's paid for our poll workers.
And so your position is taking care of the entirety of all of the voters in Montgomery. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we maintain, we are the election officials for the town.
And your pay is $21 an hour?
No, our pay, well, so we make a stipend. We get paid $22,000 annually, which broken down works out to about $21 an hour.
And your responsibilities are to take care of all of the voters for all of the town tomorrow.
Correct.
And making sure the accuracy and all of that.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right.
Just to give you a little background on the town of Montville, we're a very unique town because we are districted in such a way that we have three state representatives and two senators. And so because of that, the way that the town is broken up is why we have as many voting districts as we have. You can go to New London, that New London has two state reps and one senator. Okay, so they're voting districts, even though they're a larger city than we are, they only have three polling locations, three districts where we have five. So it has everything to do with the breakdown. Now I have a friend of mine who's a registrar out in Wilton, which is a town comparable to Montville. They pay their registrars right now $44,000 a year, and they're going up to $54,000 a year. And they work the same amount of hours that we do. The difference is that they're a wealthy town and can afford to do what they're doing. So.
What was the last time that you had seen an increase in your salary?
We had our pay raise, I think it was 2 years ago, and it went from, when I first started, it was $17,000 an hour, then it went to $17,000 a year to $19,000 an hour, right now at $19,000 a year. But we are working way more now than what we were doing before. And when you get, as we get closer to election time, there's weeks that we're here upwards of 40 hours in preparation for this. And with this early voting coming up with the presidential primary, then followed up with our canvas, which is where it's a polite way of saying scrubbing the voter rolls.
Right.
That's a big deal. That's a lot of time and a lot of work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions from anybody? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add that on the 20th, Tuesday, next Tuesday, I'm going to get together with the registrars and go over the policy and also have a walkthrough so we can see exactly it's done. If anybody wants to attend, it's at noontime.
And I'd like to make comment to that as well because I spoke with Councilor Jaskowitz earlier on that. He had asked if there was a way that we could maybe make a video or something to demonstrate that process. And as we get closer, it's a very good possibility we can do that. What I'm a little hesitant on at the moment is, as I said, the voter handbook that we have right now is a draft. And we still don't have what the Secretary of State tomorrow can change things up on us. So it's an evolving process. What we've decided and what we are looking to implement is to our ability is what we think is the best for the town of Montville. We may find, as I told Councilor Jaskowitz, that we're looking to employ four people every day for each day of early voting. If you look back in time to the 2020 presidential election, we had 80% turnout in this town that voted. Now, history shows that for early voting, there's a possibility that you're looking at upwards of 50% of your voters may vote by early voting. If that's the case within that 14 days, we're looking at putting like 250 people a day through the hallway of town hall to vote. So it may require us to change that structure and employ more people. I mean, this is the first time, we don't have any idea how this is actually going to play out because it's never been done before. And in fact, when Barbara Griffin last year asked me for what our budget would be for it, I told her $1 million and she looked at me like I was crazy. But we literally had no snapshot at that point from the Secretary of State what this was even going to look like. And not being too forward-thinking, but The other thing that we're looking at happening relatively soon, and it just went through the bonding commission, was getting new tabulators. Our tabulators that we use, just for that, so everybody knows the backstory, they've been around since the early 2000s, 2004. And we spend a lot of money to maintain them and keep them up to speed. So again, that's
another expenditure. I don't know whether or not the state's going to actually come out and buy all the tabulators that all towns are going to need. And for us, we have 14 tabulators. Right now, those tabulators sell for about $3,000 a piece. I don't know what the new ones are actually going to cost and whether or not that's going to be another unfunded mandate push on us. So we're just going to have to sit back and wait on that.
So, Jeff, just one more thing. I know you mentioned have these budgeted items been brought to Barbara Griffin? Because the Finance Committee is going to be looking at these.
I submitted a very detailed report. Our office submitted
good.
A very
I just want to make sure it is because we're starting our budget process.
Yeah, she's. And all the information that you have currently in front of you is exactly what she has.
You technically don't have a department head, so you'd be mainlining it in right into Barbara Griffin, the Finance Director.
I'm not understanding.
Well, typically all the department heads put all their budgets together.
Yep.
You don't have a department head, you're elected officials, so you're putting your budget right into Barbara, is what I was getting at.
Correct. Yeah, but when I sent that, there's a cover letter on it addressed to the Finance Committee for her to provide that to you. Okay.
All right.
So if you have any questions, being chair of the Finance Committee, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to come in and explain it.
Other than the emails, I haven't actually seen the numbers, but I will get those numbers and start looking at them.
If you have any questions, certainly reach
certainly.
Out.
Certainly.
And I assume you're going to put in the money you're talking about.
We already have. That is, yes, correct. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good job.
All right. Alterations to the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add item H into new business. To consider an act on a motion to authorize compensatory hours for essential town employees who worked the February 13th, 2024 snowstorm to be used within 30 days and used when it doesn't incur overtime.
Would you repeat that for me, please?
To consider an act on a motion to authorize compensatory hours for essential town employees who will work February 13th tomorrow to be used within 30 days and when it doesn't incur overtime. These hours are intended to for the police department and WPCA and dispatchers on straight time.
We don't have any idea what that would cost because with the police, they have different hours. We could be going into overtime.
Chairman Jeskowitz, we're looking for someone to make a motion and then a second.
All right, no discussion yet. I'm sorry.
All right, moving on. Alteration of the agenda.
Mr. Chair, I have an alteration of the agenda to go under item 14E to consider an act on a motion to appoint Mark Suarez to fill a vacancy on the Building Code Board of Appeals with a term to expire February 13th of 2028.
Second. All right. Any discussion on that? All right. All in favor to add
aye.
Item 14E? Aye. And I didn't write that down. Agnes, did you get that written down?
It's on Matt Suarez.
Second one, 14E.
14E?
Oh, Jesus. Matt.
As to the.
Oh, Matt, sorry.
Matt Suarez to the Planning and Zoning Board of Appeals.
Building Code, right?
Building Code.
Building Code Board of Appeals. Expert with a term to expire 2/13/28.
I'm going to make sure I write that down.
Was there a motion on the second?
There was not.
You ready to vote?
All in favor of adding 14E to the agenda?
Favor.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? All right. Any other alterations to the agenda? Okay. Consider act a motion to approve the special meeting minutes of January 8, 2024.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Item 6B, the regular meeting minutes of January 8, 2020.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's 6-0. All right, executive session. Consider an act of motion enter executive session for the purpose of interviewing a candidate for the Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority. Discussions to include members of the town council and Mayor Leonard Bunnell Jr.
See.
So long.
Any discussion? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Up to time. It's 7:55. Entering an executive session. Would Mr. Chuck Lumpton please join us? Okay, out of executive session at 8:06. No votes were taken. Let's resume. Remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda with a 3-minute time limit. Remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda with a 3-minute time limit. Answer questions, but I can tell you the plans that are on the town website are the same plans that have been there for over 8-9 months now, or a year. I think they're the same. So I don't know which ones you're looking at, but yes, they have not changed. There's no substantial changes within the last year. Nope, you'll have to just you make your comments, and then if you need information, I can direct you to either the town clerk's office or the planning department. They should have.
So, how much is the town? I mean, I'm getting different figures from Baker, and then I get different figures from other people. How much money are you planning to spend on that?
That's all in the public. If you don't mind, your comments should be directed to us. We're not to answer questions back during the comment time.
Okay, according to the newspaper article that I have here, it says $2.3 million for a dog pound. Is that correct?
We received a range of bids, so it could be, it was from like a little bit less than that to more than $3
million. And we're not going to be answering questions from the dais. If you have comments, make them. The mayor will be talking, and then we also have an item on the agenda to discuss the dog animal control facility.
To spend exactly for this dog pound.
once again, we're not going to be answering questions from the dais. If you want to give us a comment on whether you're in favor of something or you want to tell us about something, that's fine. But we're not going to be answering questions during public comment period. It's for you to comment on whether you approve something or dislike something.
Well, I think the dog town does need a new dog count, but they don't need to spend. Well, you're not telling you. You don't want to tell me what you want to spend. I mean, if we're paying for it, we should know how much money you're spending, right?
Ms. Jordan, it has been publicly put out about what we have set aside or we're trying to do. It's all public record, and it's not a debate right now. We're waiting on funding to come in from the state of Connecticut to continue on with the project. But the mayor will be talking more about it in probably about 5 minutes.
Okay, so at the end of the meeting, I can have some comments too, right?
Yes. Okay, any other remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda for the 3-minute limit? All right, moving on. Copy of the January 24th financial reports from Finance Director Barbara Griffin. Did everyone receive that? Copies of the legal bills from Sussman Shapiro for the month of December 2023. Copy of legal bills from Helleron and Sage for the month of December 2023. And copies of Fundamentals of Municipal Economic Development Practices and Approach to Sustainable Growth presentation by Bob Santee and Courtney Hendrick. Did everyone receive that? And copy of the town council budget sheets. Report from the town attorneys on matters referred. Mayor, do we have anything from the town attorney?
No, I have nothing.
All right. Remarks from the mayor and administrative department heads to include matters referred. Mayor, I think you have a few things you'd like to discuss with us.
Yeah, I had a busy month again. I attended the safety committee meeting, and we discussed personal protection needs for employees in the field, town hall fire drills, and panic button procedures. We had the retired building inspector Dave Jensen return in a part-time capacity, and that should help lighten the load with the building department. I attended the Cable TV Advisory Council meeting on the 17th and discussed televising the town meetings. Throughout the month, we interviewed firefighters and ended up with offering two to fill the two vacancies we have right now. Initiated startup discussions with several of the union and town attorneys on the regarding the collective bargaining units. There's 5 contracts that expire in June. Attended the Board of Education capital improvement meeting with a tour of projects. And see, I visited East Lyme on the 2nd to view their live broadcast operation, and they've really got it down to a pretty good operation. And there is money out there in a grant that we should be able to latch on to duplicate that that broadcast operation. I'm continuing to work with IT on the speakers. I hope there's an improvement noted. We're going to change these mics here also. That should add to the improvements. So that would, let's see. Oh, after being unable to fill the WPCA administrator's vacancy for nearly 5 years with no applicants that were qualified, we hired one who started today, and it's former Mayor Ron McDaniel. I met with COG just today to discuss hiring a building official as a training person, as a person in training. Norwich did it, apparently, and it worked out pretty good. And hopefully we can get something started by March to get somebody in here to train as a building official. And maybe even a second one later on down the road. Also, we're closing the town hall tomorrow for the upcoming major snowstorm we're going to be having. I have a bunch of comments that things that I did with the animal control facility, and I'll save them for comments on the item.
All right. So you give us a read. So just a question. For the East Lyme, how they do theirs, I know they use YouTube as their transmission device.
Yes.
Is it live, or is it done and then?
They tape it, and they can also make it live.
Okay. So is there a recording of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there is. And I think it's got a 30-day, I think they have a 30-day storage.
Okay. And what do they use for cameras? Anything really expensive, or is it just something?
Well, the whole system, it costs them, and again, they got it with a grant, about $85,000. And it could cost us $100,000. But again, with a grant, that should be doable.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the mayor?
If I may, hey, Wills, chairman of the board of ed, that kid that you got, doesn't he film your meetings? If you don't mind me asking, Mr. Chairman. They started filming their meetings, right, this year?
Just the work facility.
No,
I guess.
You good?
Now it works, right? There you go. Good. The guy we have at the school, Wills Pike, 71 Pheasant Run, Board of Education Chair. The guy we have at the school is a student, and he films it, and we record it, we store it. Works out pretty good for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you don't transmit it, right?
Pardon me?
You don't transmit it over the internet, right?
No, we don't currently. We've been asked, the public has asked if we could just have a video of it currently, and that's what we're doing right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all. Appreciate that.
Any other questions for the mayor? All right, moving on. Reports from standing committees, town administration, rules of procedure.
Mr. Chairman, there are two items on the agenda about job descriptions. The top committee supports them. We had the HR director here and explaining the job description. Some were just changes, others were other changes, and the committee voted in favor of
HR. HR is not here tonight.
I know that.
Okay. All right.
She was not there. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ms. Griffin, if you don't mind, and we'll get back.
All right, I'll be brief, but I do want to be up here. Barbara Griffin, finance director. And just a few comments I want to make. You do know, I'm sure, all of you, that our treasurer submitted his resignation. So we are in the process of filling that position. He's been there a long time. He was in AP for a number of years, so he is taking a lot of institutional knowledge with him. We have a temp filling in right now. Been there about a week. She's working out fantastic. She's really, really, really just absorbed a lot from him. I think it's going to take us a little while to fill it, so keep you updated. The auditors requested a second extension. Feb 29 is now their drop dead. They've assured me that they will have it. So by next meeting, I'll be able to report on the fund balance from the year closing, 23.
So other than that, what other encumbrances is that resulting in?
I'm sorry, what?
What are the encumbrances by not having a February 21 date for the audit being completed? Is it holding you up other than the fund balance? What else is it holding you up on?
The bonding, again, our financial advisor, if they have the audit completed within that time frame, it's less work going into that bonding process. So he's also part of the discussion with Nicoletta, the main person, the main contact. So she has assured him as well.
Is that
so that is a factor. That.
What about getting the mayor's budget ready for us to review? Same thing?
It has nothing to do with the audit.
All right, good.
But just on that topic, all of a sudden it seems like, oh, and I just want to clarify on the registrar. the procedure has always been that the election and registrar budgets have gone to the registrars. They fill in numbers. The only difference is now I'll put in their budget numbers, but as you discussed with them tonight, anything with changes in their salary would be referendum by this this group. So I'll put in placeholders, you know, for what they are requesting, and then make sure that that's shored up, you know, at some point. The other kind of moving parts on the budget now is this building. I was working with numbers to estimate the building department. This new piece of information I just heard tonight, so I'm going to get a little more detail on that, because that's going to affect my budgeting of not just the building department, but benefits. You
that
know,
just happened today.
Yeah, I know it did. I know, because I ran into, nothing on you, Mayor. I ran into
Maria
in the hall, and so she said she would be sending me some things. So all of a sudden, we seem to have some moving parts. Administrator at WPCA, I knew that was in the works, but I got to make sure I'm getting that in benefits. Go ahead.
They have their own pay. They pay their own, because they have their own budget.
Yes,
so
yeah.
So it shouldn't affect you.
It shouldn't, and I just want to make sure that everything is where it needs to be. Building official, different story with benefits. So things moving, working on completion of the mayor's portion of the budget so he can look at it this month. And then, as we talked about, going to the Finance Committee in March, so you can take a look at it, and you know.
What's the date for having a budget
to you
to be voted on?
What is the date?
Yeah.
By who? By the town council?
Yeah.
What is the number of days out? I had that scheduled, but
it was 75 days.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Well, my memory serves me right. So yeah, a certain time by shot.
Yeah, I was going to get that.
What I want is I want a full budget. I don't want to do one guy's and then go back with the other. I want a budget that's going to show the mayors and every department after that. So when we sit and make our decisions, if we're going to have meetings with individual departments, we will do that. Okay? So thank you.
And you're talking about the
the big budget, the whole budget.
The Finance Committee.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
If you could just check that date, make sure we're not.
I will. Yeah, I have the calendar. Yeah, on my calendar. Yeah.
But check the number of days as well.
I will. Okay. Other thing I wanted to mention is our auditor is at the end of 3 years, and I wondered what you thought about, instead of going out to bid right now for an auditor, just soliciting a quote from the CLA, the people we're working with now. I'm looking at possibly that treasurer position being a little hard to fill. I don't know how long we'll be without a treasurer. But the treasurer is key person for working with the auditor and getting a lot of the preparation for audit. So I'm wondering if doing a new treasurer and a new auditor in the same year could be... Just asking, you know, if
something
I can get a quote
yeah.
from the present and evaluate that and get back to you on that. Okay. ARPA meeting next week. They're finally going to be back meeting the 20th. And a lot of conversation going on with departments who have ARPA money. And we're looking at everybody who still has. I've been just leaning on people and getting a lot of things spent and a lot of deadlines set in place for them. So we'll have more on the ARPA at your next meeting.
Thank you, Barbara.
That's it I have on my list. Anybody have any questions?
I think so. You answered mine. Anybody have any questions? For you? All right, well, thank you.
Okay,
very,
great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian.
Any other department heads I'm not seeing out there that want to speak? Chief Blanchett.
I'll make it very quick. Wilfred Blanchett, Chief of Police. Friday night, we have an organization called Running for Heroes that are going to be coming up. It's a nationwide organization. They have a youth runner from New Jersey that's going to be heading up here. The Connecticut State Police are going to meet her at the New York-Connecticut line, take her up here to Montville. They're going to be doing a basically a run for Canine Bracco, the state police canine that was killed in a line of duty, and also Canine Barrett. So we're going to do it at the Pavilion, 6 o'clock, if anybody wants to come and run or support. I reached out to the fire departments. They're going to come and assist us.
That's Friday.
It's going to be this Friday night, 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock at night?
6 o'clock at night. So night we'll be shutting down portions of Oxibaxo Dam Road right by the Pavilion. It's a mile run up and then a mile run back, a mile for each one of the dogs that were killed in the line of duty.
Is this a benefit?
It is. It's for their benefit, but they're going to be doing a flag presentation to each one of the canine handlers. And again, it's for both dogs. We're just lucky it's going to be held in Montville for both the animals. So, any questions?
Thank you, Chief.
Thanks.
All right. Moving on, Finance Committee. We just pretty much talked about everything. We're going to be working on the budget and getting that all together. Public Works, Solid Waste. Councilor Karen is not here. Did you have anything that you wanted to
share?
Yeah,
I just grabbed a couple of things. So we did discuss our funded projects, where they stand, funding, and if there's any funding that can be returned to the ARPA accounts. Youth service bathroom plans will need to be submitted to the counselors Lathrop and Karen for them to look over for possible cost saving adjustments. We're renting a bucket truck for some tree clearing, and we talked about future capital projects for here at the town hall, roof furnace renovations, and contractors will be contacted for cost estimates.
Report from special committees and liaisons. Commission on Aging, Councilor is not here. Mayor, do you have anything to add that Councilor Karen on the Commission on Aging, Nonprofit Organizations, and Social Services?
Only that Social Services will be moving back into the former town hall. It's in the works now.
All right. Thank you. Councilor Jaskiewicz, Board of Education and Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. On the Board of Ed, Kate and I attended that meeting. And Superintendent Palin, as you all know, resigned that night.
Well, she announced
it. She's leaving. She announced it. And they got accepted the following week. And one of the things they talked about was the Marvels. It's something to see if you can go to one of their meetings, the Montville Marvels. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize it's great. They have some great ones. A little kid that had given a kidney, and I think that's an outstanding thing that we should do. The other thing is she talked about the new appointment of Will Krizonis, a gentleman from North Stones who took over as their the construction guy that does all the work that I'm...
The facilities?
The facilities manager, yeah, thank you. He's from North Stone. He was there. It was nice. And the other, she talked about a capital plan. She presented her capital plan, which I found was interesting. Not bad, to be honest with you. And they also made mention that they hired two new PRs, you know, school resource officers. So that was interesting. And that's really it.
What about planning and zoning?
What about planning? Okay. Give you a chance to switch pages.
All right, sorry.
They talked about group child care homes, which I found interesting. And in their conversation, it was a good meeting, a very good meeting. It went well. There was acceptance and denials of things. But these are things that I brought out. And they also discussed, which I think hints of affordable housing in town, of multiple families in one-family homes. And that tells me that we in the town have to look at affordable housing. And the ZEO, Zoning Enforcement Office,
about 153 complaints of different values, now different things. I'm not going to read them all, but if you want to, they print that out, and you can go look at it. But so they're pretty busy, and I think they're doing a good job for us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilor Lathrop, Economic Development and Water Pollution Control Authority.
Economic Development Commission, we had a nice presentation this month. I don't know how many people here were able to attend it. Mayor Lenny Bunnell was there. It was a really nice presentation about businesses coming to towns and kind of like what drives their decisions for it and kind of like where Montville sits on that. And it was really nice because this one really touched base like on Montville. And I thought that was pretty nice. It's a shame more people weren't there for it. But it was a really nice presentation. They're definitely a committee that's looking to do a little growing. So if anybody's looking for anything like that, a couple extra members would probably be helpful. But it was, like I said, a pretty good meeting. There's some energy getting going there. So we'll probably see some more stuff happening soon. Water Pollution Control Authority. We talked about the new water tower going in on Cook Hill, which is down 32 up behind T&M Auto Body there. There's a little bit of a stalemate on it right now because of the frost in the ground. The construction crew had kind of held off because it was winter time, and then oddly enough, we don't have a crazy winter. That is going to be going soon, and there's going to be a ribbon cutting for the official groundbreaking there, and we have a couple projects coming up at the plant, and we're looking at some expansion of the wastewater things. So with bringing new business to town, we need more sewer connections and water connections, so we're going to be starting to do some research and looking at to what will help drive that, and they're going to be doing a rate study looking into that to make sure that the rates for water are adequate with what we need to sustain the water supply. I think that's about it.
Yeah. Well, currently we get our water from Groton.
Yes. So
whatever they set their rates at, we have to pretty much follow suit.
Jack up there.
Yeah, but we also have to maintain everything on our side of the system.
Right.
So it's
right.
Not just their rate, it's ability to maintain it on our end.
Oh, absolutely. But usually when they raise their rates, we have to raise theirs and follow suit. So, Councilor Sevilla, the Conservation Commission, Public Safety, Service Bureau.
Conservation Commission, they've been busy. If you guys have been down to the Conservation Center lately, they've been doing a lot of work down there. There's actually a new bench that was donated by the Montville Lions, so thanks to the Montville Lions. They've done work on the trails and created more access going up towards Black Ash. So definitely go down there and check it out. As far as Public Safety Commission, there was police accountability legislation that was put forward in 2019. We're currently working towards accreditation, and I believe the Tier 1 state accreditation will be finalized in March. So the police department's been awesome. Just want to shout them out. Also, K-9 Barrett will be added to Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. That's special for canines that are killed in the line of duty, so that's a great honor. Youth services, not a whole lot. They're doing a penny drive currently, so definitely go down. Youth services, help out with that if you can. And that's it.
All right, thank you. Councilor Southard, Farmers Market Committee, Library Committee, and Parks and Rec Commission.
Okay, the Farmers Market had their first meeting of the year last month. The Farmers Market will continue to be on Tuesdays from 4 to 7, June 18th to September 24th. We're currently accepting applications for vendors as well as musicians. The library, Raymond Library Committee, there was no meeting. However, I did sit down over the weekend and I met with two members of the board, as well as Carrie Wall, the director, and I was kind of given an orientation, some history as to the library as to how things have been done and what they're looking towards in the future. They'll be having a meeting coming up either in March or April. They haven't quite decided yet, so once that date is set, I will be going to that meeting. And Parks and Recreation, so there has been some interest in having some food trucks at Fair Oaks on the weekends. So Director Bushway has been tasked to establish rules and procedures for this because I know I'm getting the looks. So we did have a local woman that has a food truck reached out and wanted to go and park at Fair Oaks.
That was a good look. It wasn't a...
Okay. Okay. So we felt, or they felt, that it was important to establish some sort of rules and procedures for this because it's still... Our community center, which on the weekends has dance program, and they have people rented out for parties and things like that. So
need to go to TARP?
I believe eventually it's going to. So Peter's working on that. The dance room floor is completed, and there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony, which was really nice. The dance folks really put on a nice little party there for that. Parks and Rec approved their regular budget and capital improvement budgets. There was, and those will go to the finance department, and just one thing about summer camp, there's going to be an increase in the tuition for that. It's going to go up $5 per week.
All right. Thank you very much. Appointments and resignations. To consider and act on a motion to appoint Isaac Michael Tate to fill a vacancy on the Planning and Zoning Commission with a term to expire on May 9th, 2024.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilor Perrin? Oh, sorry. Councilor Jessler?
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius?
Favor.
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 Favor. It's 6-0 in favor. Consider an act of motion to nominate and appoint either Alfred Mandler, Brian Baker, Matthew Suarez, or Mark Richards to fill a vacancy on the Public Safety Commission with a term to expire on April 9th, 2026. So I'd like to have a motion from the dais.
So moved.
Make a motion to...
Yeah, go ahead.
To appoint Brian Baker.
We need a second at some point, people.
I know.
So you made a motion.
Oh, okay.
Second.
Second. Okay. So the motion is, consider an act of motion to appoint either, to appoint Brian Baker. Any other motions? To appoint anyone? All right. Hearing none. This vote is to appoint Brian Baker to the Public Safety Commission with a term to expire on April 9th, 2026. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor
Favor.
Councilor
Favor.
Councilor
Favor.
Favor. 6-0. To consider an act on a motion to waive the waiting period for appointment rule 14C of the Town Council Rules and Procedures for the Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? Okay.
Councilor Jessler?
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius?
Favor.
Councilor Sutherland?
Favor.
Councilor
Favor.
Favor. All right, 6-0 in favor. Now, consider an act of motion to appoint Chuck Longton to fill a vacancy on the Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority with a term to expire on February 12th, 2026.
So moved.
Second.
Councilor Jessler?
Favor.
Councilor
Lathrop? Favor.
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 Favor. So 6-0 in favor. Someone will have to read 14E, please.
Okay, to consider an act on a motion to appoint Matt Suarez to fill a vacancy on the Building Code Board of Appeals with a term to expire February 13th, 2028.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. Hearing none, roll call, please.
Councilor Jessler?
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius?
Favor.
Councilor
Sutherland? Favor.
Councilor
Favor.
Councilor
Favor. 6-0 in favor. Okay, unfinished business. To consider an act and motion to discuss the progress of the animal shelter project.
So moved.
So may.
Second.
Second. Send it right to Mayor.
Let me just say that I looked into regionalizing with New London, because it's my understanding, Councilor Yuknik, that they had room there, and they do not have room there. That's right from the mayor's meeting I had with him. And in order for us to do that, it would require enlarging their facility to accommodate us and Salem. So I'm waiting for an estimate from them to see what that would actually cost as an option. That isn't what we will do as an option. First, we've got to know what the cost is going to be. We know that if we did go with New London, there would be a monthly charge for sharing the costs, which is not significant, but it is a regular cost monthly. So I met with Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz on the 19th to discuss funding opportunities with her, and I submitted a letter to her to go to the governor's office to see what they can do for us for funding on this facility. I also met with Representative Joe Courtney's office, an aide, to discuss some federal funding on the animal control facility. I met with State Representative Cheeseman to discuss funding opportunities, not only for the animal control facility, but just for what it's worth, to talk about the problem at Gardner Lake, which is significant in the summer. I met with Senator Murphy's aide to discuss funding opportunities again for federal opportunities. I'm in discussions with three municipalities to regionalize with them, to share services, to increase our advantages for some funding to build this facility. As I said before, I've spoken with up to this point with Lieutenant Governor, Senator Marks, Senator Austin, Representative Cheeseman, and Courtney and Murphy and their offices for funding. And I followed up all of those meetings with letters to them identifying not only the facility needs, but all of our funding needs. So, and I've also looked into prefab buildings. And contrary to popular belief, prefab buildings aren't that cheap. And I sent something out to everybody identifying the prefab. And I'm waiting for estimates on the cost to renovate the existing facility. So as soon as we have some figures, we'll be able to make a better decision on the way we're going to go. But primarily, it's the funding that we're looking for from the Community Investment Fund grant. And we won't know about that until March. And then the governor's decision won't be here until early May. So progress is we're still giving it attention. Hope I covered all the issues.
Well, if I may, I would like to expound on some of that a little bit. The first thing is the talk about New London not having room. That's true, and it's not true. They have enough kennel spaces, and as you know, the kennels, the dog kennels, are the most expensive part of the building. So that's already been done. So there's enough dog kennels. What they don't have enough room in is storage and office space and small animal room. But that would be a lot cheaper than building additional dog runs, because that's just straight cement walls. You don't have to add anything special for that. Everything else is already done. So I cannot imagine that would be a whole lot of money to accomplish that. And as far as the monthly charge for going there, that would be just the splitting of the electrical and the water and the oil. That's the agreement they have with the town of Waterford and East Lyme, is they split the cost of that stuff. There's no actual rent that Waterford and East Lyme pays there to go there. The cost to renovate the existing building, the existing facilities you spoke about, I don't believe that's feasible, because in order to do substantial renovations on the building, you would have to bring it up to the code set by the state. And that would include making the runs bigger, because right now, I believe, they're too small. They don't fit the state's boundaries of how many square feet they're supposed to be. So that means you'd have to tear down the walls. And if you're going to do that, you might as well just rebuild the whole thing from scratch. And the last thing I wanted to touch on, I spoke with somebody from the town of Colchester who utilizes, that town utilizes NECOG. I learned that they pay NECOG $93,000 a year, and NECOG will not come out to their town unless somebody caught the stray dog and is holding on to it. They don't come out and look for the dogs. They don't do a whole lot of stuff. To me, that's crazy. $93,000 a year. You could hire one heck of an ACO for that that would do all of the things that NECOG is telling you we're not going to do. So I would strongly discourage anybody from them thinking that NECOG is the way to go in our quest to get this finished.
Well, I don't think anybody's recommending going to NECOG. The one thing I would point out is the mayor did say that we are waiting on an answer for, I think what you alluded to was the office space and the storage. So if that's the case, maybe we'll get a positive result back from that. And then, but with all the feelers, just like I think what the takeaway was, the mayor's been talking to a lot of people about money, a lot more than we've had in the past. So hopefully that'll get some.
Let me just add that according to the mayor of New London, it's adding the runs also.
Absolutely not. There's 24 dog kennels there now, and between Waterford, East Lyme, and New London, we never fill up more than half of those.
Well, he's the one that we're going to enter into the agreement with, so it's going to be his decision if you're going to have to add runs. Not you, not me.
Well, I would think you would also speak to the people that actually do the job there, Mr. Mayor, and take their advice and their information.
I'm discussing this with the CEO of New London.
Okay. The CEO who does not do that job, though.
Well, then maybe there's some ambiguity.
We had
a decision.
We had Public Works there, and we had I think it was the New London attorney. I forget who else was there. But there was a few people there. It wasn't just the mayor. And as far as the existing facility goes, I'm not going to make any decisions. I'm not going to ask anybody here to make any decisions on guesswork. We're going to know what we're talking about. That's why I've asked the architect who designed the proposed facility to look at the existing facility. They know what's necessary, and we'll know what's going to cost. I'm not going to guess.
Okay. Sounds good. Any more discussion on the animal control facility? All right, moving on. New business. The town of Montville hereby resolves to refund taxes due to overpayments and corrections in the amount of $5,401.05, as requested by the tax collector.
So move.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. Roll call vote, please.
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor
Sebelian? Favor.
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 Favor. 6-0 in favor. Item B, the town of Montville hereby resolves to review and approve the position description for the Director of Land Use and Department Development as recommended by the Town Administration Rules and Procedure Standing Committee.
So move.
Second.
Councilor Jaskiewicz, tell us about this.
That was we had the HR director here at our meeting, and it was a little lively for us. We were asking, looking for what the changes were, and I thought she did a great job.
What the changes?
She did. But we asked our certain questions, the committee did, and there were no major changes on this one, but that's all I can say. I think she just did a good job. And in fact, she's going to look at, I think, all the job descriptions in the town, because they're a little outdated. And I want the council to support this committee's approval of both these job descriptions, please.
Right. Mayor, do you have anything to add on that?
No, just some minor changes were made to that, and as well as the other one. It's just updating and make them more current.
All right. Favor. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilor Jaskel.
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop.
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius.
Favor.
Councilor Sullivan.
Favor.
Councilor
Gibson. Favor.
Councilor May.
Favor. 6-0 in favor. Item C, the Town of Mount Belvieu resolves to review and approve the position description for the administrative assistant position as recommended by the Town Administration's Rule and Procedure Standing Committee.
So move.
Second.
Councilor Jaskiewicz.
Same thing with this committee. On this recommendation, there were some changes. She changed the title to executive assistant. And when she came, and she did a good job on this one, really upgrading it a little bit compared to what it was before. And Councilor Nick and I were here, and she did a good job again. And again, we're going to look at all of these because they want upgraded. Thank you. And I hope your support, please.
Any other questions? All right, roll call, please.
Councilor Jaskiewicz.
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop.
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius.
Favor.
Councilor Sullivan.
Favor.
Councilor Eubank.
Favor.
Councilor May.
Favor. 6-0 in favor. The Town of Mount Belvieu hereby resolves to accept the road widening strips as approved as part of the subdivision application number 23 SUB2 for Old Colchester Road, parcel ID 037-006-000, Oakdale, Connecticut. Don't all go at once, guys.
So move, but you got to give me some information, right?
Second.
Okay. Also.
Okay, this is a parcel of land. We have to go into discussion before I can talk about it, Mr. Carroll. This is for subdivision, and what it is this is at the corner of Old Colchester Road and, is it Moxley, Mayor?
Yeah, Old Colchester and Moxley.
And so, as part of the subdivision application, they take that time to ask the applicant to provide adequate road easement for such things as, in this case, road widening strips, so that in the event they have to do whatever, they just need permission to be able to. So it's just a formality that asks the applicant to provide that so that they can have good road maintenance in the future at that intersection. So, any other questions? All right. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Jaskiewicz.
Favor.
Councilor
Lathrop. Favor.
Councilor Sebelius.
Favor.
Councilor Sullivan.
Favor.
Councilor Eubank.
Favor.
Councilor May.
Favor. 6-0 in favor. Item E, the Town of Mount Belvieu hereby resolves to authorize Mayor Leonard Bunnell Sr. to execute the agreement entitled Master Municipal Agreement for Construction Projects and any documents related thereto.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
This is an annual requirement that is authorization from the town council. The town council is authorizing me to sign agreements for projects and construction projects by the state on state roads.
All right. Any questions for the mayor? Any more discussion? Roll call vote.
Oh, sorry.
Councilor Jaskiewicz.
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop.
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius.
Favor.
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 Favor. 6-0 in favor. Item F, the Town of Mountville hereby resolves to approve the transfer of $18,880 from the general fund to capital line item 10960-54187 for foam removal and cleaning for the Chesterfield Volunteer Fire Company truck number M31 and Oakdale Volunteer Fire Company truck number M41.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Briefly, this is was a request by the fire chiefs from Oakdale and Chesterfield. They have a requirement to remove the PFAB type foam, and it has to be professionally cleaned and certified. So it's approximately $9,000 to do each vehicle. And that's why they're articulated for each truck, because each fire company is its own entity. And there is money and funds and grants available that they are going to be applying for in the future on a first-come, first-served basis. So, but this is to get it done, and then in anticipation, hopefully they'll get the grant to reimburse that for these, the cleaning of these vehicles. But this is something that has to be done, and that's more to say on that. Any other discussion on this? Or
that's that foam that's...
Right. As you know, there's a lot of the firefighting foam is hazardous. It's carcinogen, amongst other things, and they have to have it removed and freshly cleaned. So, roll call vote, please.
Councilor
Gassler. Favor.
Councilor Lathrop.
Favor.
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 Favor. 6-0 in favor. Item G, the Town of Montville hereby resolves to authorize the Finance Director to send out an RFP, request for a proposal, for economic development consultation.
So move.
Second.
All right. Mayor, tell us about this a little bit.
Well, you know, basically, we need to have a consulting firm to help us in the attraction and the dealings with development. And what we're looking for here is companies to give us a proposal on what they can do to help us and what it's going to cost. We're guessing. Again, we shouldn't be guessing. We need to know facts. We need to know what a company can do for us. Because some of these deals, some of these opportunities that are going to come our way, these people are going to be looking for tax breaks. And we can't just give it, but we can come up with a formula that is beneficial to the developer and is also beneficial to us. So we have something in writing, and we don't just grant some tax exemptions like what happened at with Pfizer in New London. I think this is a good thing to do, so we get a good understanding of what benefit we can derive from it and what it's going to cost.
Well, a couple of things. I know Councilor Lathrop mentioned it. It was a really good, Mr. Santee did a real good presentation. So
yes.
I think what the mayor was trying to also convey is that's also with the groom and whatever that came that was very lengthy. But those are the type of companies that could be beneficial. And just keep this in mind, this is just a request for a proposal, a request for qualifications. We're not signing any documents to pay them. Or we don't even know what they're going to charge us. We don't even know what their scope of services they're going to provide. But at least it starts gives us that glimpse, because I've always said that we're going to need somebody that's going to be able to help us attract businesses in here. And I said it that night, they may have to be consulting to tell the planning and zoning that maybe we need to change things a little bit to make things a little easier. You mentioned earlier about WPC and water. It's been my thing for a long time to get water up 163, getting water up to the schools and in different areas so that we got good fire protection. You know, so these are things we know, but we need maybe have somebody. So I think this RFP is probably a good start, but we really need to start looking at what the scope that they're going to do. So that'll come out in the request for qualifications. So any other comments? I'd like to hear some more discussion on this, because I think this is kind of a pinnacle thing for our town to be able to start having some consulting to help us either grow our town or make our town a little more attractive to open up our tax base, which is something I think everyone on this dais is striving for. So with that in mind, any more comments, questions, discussions? All right. So roll call, please.
Councilor Jaskowitz?
Favor.
Councilor Lathrop?
Favor.
Councilor Sebelius?
Favor.
Councilor Sellers?
Favor.
Councilor Eastman?
Favor.
Favor. 6-0 favor. Okay, remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit?
Nope. You got item H.
They never
added under new business.
It wasn't seconded.
It was not seconded.
Oh, it was not.
It was not.
Okay.
Should have seconded it. I mean, should have made the motion.
Yeah.
Remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit.
So on behalf of myself personally and member of the Conservation Commission, I want to thank you guys for allowing Lights Out to come here today and present. I think it's a really good opportunity for the town to really think about and turning some of the lights off on, you know, a lot of the municipal buildings or even like the tennis courts, pickleball courts, you know, after certain times, I think could help save a lot of money to not only help the animals and, you know, our own health, but also save the town a good amount of money. So I just wanted to thank you for allowing them to come and speak. So, thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
Remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit. And I'll go one more time. Remarks from the public.
Hi, Krista Sarah, 46 Doyle Road. I don't really have anything largely important. I know you guys are pretty much not hugely on board with the NECOG thing, but I know there's a lot of public here tonight. I put a call in 3 hours ago to a desperate situation in Jewett City to NECOG, deplorable conditions for two dogs that are tethered. They have absolutely no housing. They are just, they're outside in storms constantly. People have made multiple reports. 3 hours ago, I called and have been waiting for a callback. So that's the kind of care that you can expect for your animals if you go with a place like that. So if that's something that you guys are interested in, that's just some more feedback. But I know you guys are not. That's all I got for tonight. Thank you all for showing up.
Thank you.
Hi, Rebecca Maurice, 1567 Route 85. I'm also the owner of Albright Canines. I also contacted NECOG 5 weeks ago for information from the Freedom of Information Act. I still have not heard back from them. So I am also hoping that you not consider NECOG. I know I'm not supposed to ask questions, but if I ask a question, would that mean that it gets looked into possibly? Okay, one of my questions was, have you looked at any new businesses, meaning kennels, that were created within the last 5 years that have passed inspection and looked at them? I don't know if you've done that. Also, what do you need from the townspeople in regards to what we're looking for? Do you need, like, polls done? Do you need a petition signed or anything like that? Because I think a lot of us are very interested in what goes forward and what you need from us as far as what we could do to help in that. And also, have you looked into existing kennels in surrounding towns to lease them or lease runs for animal control? Have you explored that option? That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for the input.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Ellen Desjardins, 513 Raymond Hill Road, Onksville. What I would like to do is I would like to invite you to come to our kennel and see what a good kennel looks like. We've been operating a kennel since 1960. In all those times, I've never been cited by the state, never. And you can probably check that out at the state level also. So if you'd like to come and look at the kennel and see what a boarding kennel looks like, you're invited. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit. All right. Thank you all for coming out. Remarks from the councilors and the mayor. Mayor, I'll let you go first.
I appreciate everybody showing up. I know this is a very important issue on the animal control facility, and I can only tell you that I have been giving it a lot of attention, and by proof of the information that I've been providing to you. I will look into some of the suggestions that were thrown out here today. using someone else's facility is not at the top of the list. You know, top of the list really is our own facility. And if we can get these other municipalities on board with us, it is going to improve our funding opportunities. So that's our number one object. And that's not going to happen until, as I said, March and then May, if they're going to do the funding. I want to thank the group that showed up today for the Lights Out presentation. That was very informative. I can tell you that the lighting trespassing, light trespassing issue is something that could have been used back in my day with people complaining about lights shining in their windows.
It would have been something to use.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
All right.
That's for you, Nick.
Thank you, sir. I want to address a couple things. First, Mrs. Desjardins, you asked a question and we weren't able to answer it before, so I'll try to answer it now. You can stay there. You asked how much money the town was going to spend on this. The answer is we don't know because we don't know which direction we're going at this point. We got multiple estimates from different building companies on what it would cost to build a shelter. I think it was $2.3 million to up to over $3 million. But we don't even know if that's the route we're going, so we don't really have an answer for your question on that. To the young lady who asked about petitions are a very valuable and useful tool. Just like showing up to these meetings shows the councilors and the mayor that people are really serious about this issue and we want it resolved. I'm going to keep this issue on the agenda for every regular council meeting until it's resolved. So you'll all be able to come here every time and hear the updates and have your say. And it's important. We need to hear what you guys say. We need to hear what you think. Whether you're for it, whether you're against it, we want to hear it all. We take in all that information, and then we make our decision based on that. So if we don't hear from you, we don't know what you want, probably not going to get what you want. So it's important that you keep showing up here, and you keep coming, and you keep making your voices heard. That's very important. That's all I have.
Councilor Lather.
Good presentation tonight. Definitely some seeds for thought there. There's definitely things they touched upon that I've thought a handful of times myself. Lack of birds, lack of fireflies, things that bother me from our childhood. So hopefully with these incentives coming out, we can start getting some of that back so our kids can have it, our grandkids can have it. So I thought that was a really great presentation. And again, to touch on what he said, we are elected by the people that live in the town of Montville. We represent you. So you guys coming here and showing what you want tells us what you want. So keep showing up. Thank you.
Yeah, just to echo that, thanks for coming. You asked, I think it was Rebecca, is it your first name? You asked what you guys could do. I suggested on Facebook just writing to Governor Lamont's office about the Community Investment Fund grant. Just tell him, hey, it's something that our townspeople want. It's something that our animals need. And maybe we'll have a better chance of getting that grant. So just things like that can help. The presentation I thought was great. I'm glad that's opening some eyes for, you know, to problems that are out there. I don't know if you've driven by like Camp Oakdale late at night. The lights are on even if no one's there. So I think simple fixes like that, like timers or motion sensor lights, something to consider, save money, help out the animals, help out people. So thank you guys.
So a couple of things that that the mayor brought up. He talked to Senator Martha Marks, Senator Kathy Austin. Kathy Austin is on the appropriations thing. She's actually the one that would hold the purse strings for many of these things. Susan Bicewicz. So those are all people, and Holly Cheeseman and Kathleen McCarthy and Kevin Ryan. Write them. Call them. Let them know that we need that money because it was the governor on the last one that took it out. So we're coming up, and it's great you're coming here, but you asked if there's a poll or something you could do. Write those individuals. They're your state representatives. They're your state senators. We elected them. They work for us. And we need that money for this thing. So that would be a start. Camp Oakdale. The average monthly electricity for Camp Oakdale is $4,000. A lot of that is the football lights, but a considerable amount could be the tennis courts. So when you see those lights on at night and you don't see anybody playing, you're paying for that electric bill. $4,000 a month. So that's why it's important to start really looking at these things. Let us know if you see a town facility that's got a light that's out that needs to, that maybe needs to be, you know, fixed or put on a timer, because I don't know about you, but $4,000 a month is a lot of money, and sometimes it's more money, and that's our money that we're paying for. So we need to do something about that, and we can also help with the Lights Out initiative at the same time. So those are the things that I took away from tonight's meeting, that I think that, you know, the mayor's working really hard. We put in the task to start talking to people, trying to find money, and I think we're going to get it. But I think we may need your help, too, to talk to these state legislators as well. So, Councilor Jaskins.
Let's not forget the early voting, folks. That's going to be a change for us, a big change about early voting and how it takes place. They made a good presentation, but they were saying it's going to be about 14 or 24. So let's not forget that, please, that we're going to try to do that so people can get out and early vote. And I think once we get it going, it'll work smooth. But, and I understand, I have my own theory about what the dog pound thing. But the mayor's doing a heck of a job as far as I'm concerned, and I will talk with him about what my theory is, what we should possibly do. But, again, early voting, let's not forget that. The dog pound isn't the only issue we're going to be dealing with. The early voting is the other one. Thank you.
Councilor Southard?
I just want to thank, I had a couple of people reach out to me over the past month since our last meeting to talk about the animal control facility, and I appreciated having those conversations and the back and forth on the email. And we all know how important that is, and I think that, you know, that's pretty clear here. Thank you to the Conservation Commission for bringing forth that presentation. Birds, pollinators, all of that is so important. With no pollinators, no food, no farmer's market. No farmers market. My part-time job. So thank you for all of that, and happy Valentine's Day, and everybody stay safe in the storm.
Yeah, that's right.
So, motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
Have a happy Valentine's Day.
Hey, Wills. Wills.
Yeah.
I have my song.
Kind of nice having this working.
No more coffee.
Good job. I'm going to go down to the casino and tell them they're going to redo their hotel.
Here, I quit.